You're listening to The Daily Traditionalist with Matthew Heidmark at RadioArian.com.
Hello, comrades. This is your host of the Daily Traditionalist, Matthew Heimbach, and I'm here today joined by Dr. Matthew Johnson. And Dr. Johnson, we've been talking about this subject a lot, the subject of Russia and the United States, about the globalist warmongering. And, you know, it's always an interesting thing. You see this within the nationalist cause. We're usually one of the first ones to be able to alert the world to danger, to be talking about these issues of what's going on. And the mainstream media is spending its time talking about things Donald Trump said 15 years ago, or Kim Kardashian's newest clothing line or whatever it is, and we're talking about serious geopolitical problems. And now, of course, it's actually filtering into the mainstream, where you have mainstream papers, mainstream websites talking about that this is not a Cold War. The two nations are on a collision course between Russia and the United States towards war. Russia is calling its embassy staff to call their families home, and other government officials to call their families back to the motherland. And things are heating up. I was just watching something last night about in eastern Ukraine, how the Canadians have pledged another $1 billion in modernization, is the term they used, also known as arming and training the Ukrainian military against the separatists in eastern Ukraine who are fighting for independence. And by golly, is it a mess? So first of all, how you doing? Second of all, what do you think about everything that's going on? Things are getting crazier by the day.
Well, you know, when I first started in this field and I began focusing on Russia, you know, it was when the wall was coming down and the Soviet Union was dissipating. But never did I expect this. Never at any time in the so-called Cold War was there ever this level of tension. There was never any threat, not even during the Cuban crisis. Proving a point that I've been arguing for a long time, that nationalism, especially Russian nationalism, is the enemy. You know, the Bolsheviks got aid, trade deals, trade credits. The Putin's nationalists get nothing but sanctions. It's always been the enemy, never the Soviets. The Soviets were never treated this way, were never threatened like this. Hillary Clinton is threatening, and the average American who's going to die for this has no idea why. That's the biggest problem. They have no idea what's going on. Go ahead.
Well, and that's the thing that that really does you know, kind of blow my mind, that there really is no awareness to the American public of what's going on. It's now even being reported, but no one has any context for what's going on. I mean, to really strike that your average American voter has really couldn't even find Ukraine on a map, doesn't even know what's going on in Syria, shows me that the system is keeping information as close to the chest as possible. And this goes in, of course, like the strike against the Syrian Arab Army targets, where 60 Syrian soldiers were killed, 100 were wounded. You know, it was called an accident. It seems to me very clearly that they think that they can give the minimum amount of information to the public to try and counter any Russian narrative or any other country's narrative, in all honesty, of the truth. And they've just got a very low view of the average American to just, you know, really go along with all their plans and policies.
Well, if this is really a hot war, a shooting war, the U.S. is going to lose. And I pray God that that's the case. The U.S. will lose because Russia and China have a defense pact through the SCO. But even just alone, Russia would defeat the U.S., partially because U.S. morale is so low. China would cut off all trade credits would stop buying all American debt. It would be a complete disaster. I also think that pro-American governments in the world will be overthrown. And North Korea will do whatever it pleases. So I, you know, this is an absolute, it's a lose-lose. As far as the U.S. is concerned, that the regime is gambling to get out of the mess, you know, to keep Trump from being president, to destroy nationalism. in one huge gamble here. And it's a gamble that they can't win. Russia has done nothing wrong, not in Ukraine, not in Syria, not anywhere. And yet the U.S. is an empire operating in almost every country on the planet. And Americans are supposed to die for this and die in large numbers.
Well, and you know, you strike the idea of things, how bad it would get, how it is a lose-lose. I mean, the only thing that makes sense to me with this current trajectory for the United States government and for NATO in general is they're willing, of course, you know, the global Jewish oligarchs don't care about our lives. They never have. We're goyim. We're cattle to be used and abused and, you know, thrown away. So, of course, they don't care about our lives. But all it seems to me is the main point is to, like you said, to gamble on the idea that they could kind of try and crash all the systems simultaneously. Doesn't matter how many millions of people might lose their lives. Doesn't matter what their setbacks might be, because this all started heating up with Brexit on one hand, because that's an indicator that the European Union, the first thread has been pulled. It's starting to unravel. That was their huge project they've been working on for over a century with the Kalergi plan to be able to destroy Europe once and for all. And then, of course, in the United States with Donald Trump, not being a nationalist in our sense, but just wanting to put the brakes basically on globalism and have some common sense policies and reforms, that really changes things. And they're willing to try and destroy that to stop that from happening. So do you see those two things being linked, Trump and Brexit? Because in that case, it looks to me that both of the major Jewish oligarchs' projects, the USA and the European Union, are starting to unravel, and they I think they'd rather break it than let someone else have it.
That's exactly right. They are linked. The Brexit issue, the simmering anger of white people in Europe and America. You forgot to mention the new president of the Philippines. These people, they're popular men. Putin, Lukashenko, these are popular individuals, and any war is going to increase their popularity. The U.S. can only count on two allies, Britain and Japan. In the world. And after a while, once the body bags start coming home, they're going to be wondering, who am I fighting for? And I think morale is everything. I mean, the Russians know exactly what they're fighting for. The Americans have no idea. But they are all linked. I mean, we're doing very well. Nationalism is winning. And so the regime is behaving like a wounded animal. You corner a wounded animal and it will lash out. They're unpredictable and dangerous. And that's what's happening here. It's not rational.
Well, to kind of kick into something that is of concern, and I get asked this question on a regular basis, but what are we as nationalists if things go forward in this trajectory? I mean, of course, we could have Donald Trump win, as I saw one of the Russian politicians in the Duma said that a vote for Hillary Clinton is a vote for nuclear war, and a vote for Trump is for world peace. And I think that is very accurate statements. So, going down this Hillary path, we know she doesn't like her political opponents. We know that anything she does would be trying to open up for essentially a police state, forced upon us, as they're already doing to some extent in places like Britain with speech codes and things like that. But what do we as nationalists do? Because, of course, we've talked about it before, that any form of armed struggle, of course, is off the table. For a variety of reasons, including our system would love that. That's exactly what the feds want. That's exactly what the Jews want to be able to bite us into, because then they can take their trillions of dollars worth of stockpiles of military resources to just murder white people left and right and absolutely work to destroy us. That's why federal informants and stuff and nationalist movements try and encourage violent behavior. It's not just to get convictions, but every time our movement lashes back at them, we lose the moral high ground and it justifies more repression against nationalists. So, of course, we have to be focused entirely as a legal political movement. We have to be working socially, winning hearts and minds. We've talked about this before. Everybody knows it, but it has to be always reminded that we're a peaceful, legal political movement. But what do we do in a Hillary Clinton presidency as we're careening towards war with nations that, as you said, could easily defeat us? The system is falling apart. I was reading this morning economically. There are some analysts that are predicting that they're seeing a possible additional bubble within the stock market as they had in 1987, where some of the biggest companies in the world lost like 25% of their value in one day. So we've got economic problems, social problems, Black Lives Matter is everywhere, Hillary Clinton presidency. What do we as nationalists do? Because she doesn't like her political opponents. Things are getting crazy. What suggestions do you give for folks to begin preparing for? Because we've got a calm before the storm. No matter which one of these things breaks first, we've got a calm before the storm. So what would you suggest to our comrades who are listening to be prepared and to be focusing on over the next several months and year?
The very last thing that Willis Cardo said to me was that if there's ever a shooting war with Russia, you have to get out of the country. Now, I don't know how plausible that is, but what he really meant was that, and it's always a kind of a big theme in his his mind, is that warfare gives the state a big excuse to get rid of its opponents. And if the war is won, those opponents, you know, that's totally justified, and no one will ever question it again. So it wasn't so much get out of the country, but you're in a lot of trouble. Donald Trump could only lose if the polls are rigged, and rigged very seriously. The question is, would nationalists do anything about it? And that's really where the weak link. If this happens to the left, you know, they have flanks of rioters that could and violent people that could take action. We don't. They may say we could kill Donald Trump and those guys won't do anything. So a Trump loss would mean in their system's mind that nationalism in general has been repudiated by the Americans, and it would mean death for us, even if there was no war with Russia. I guess that American General Milley, who threatened the Russians, you know, he's a political shill. It's very rare to hear that from military men with combat experience. They never romanticize or valorize combat ever. And it would be bloody and it would be nasty. But what do we do? For me personally, all I could do is continue to write. I don't know what else to do. I have no other abilities. So that's what I would do. Ask people the simple questions. Why is this war being fought? And see the answers that you get. You know, I mean, that's for comic relief, but you know, there is no answer. They have no idea why.
Well, I don't remember if I told you, Dr. Johnson, but I had a funny excursion with the, I think I might have, but I think it's a good story, with the BBC not too long ago. They mentioned that Putin was a tyrant, and you know, I said, I don't know, what's the definition of a tyrant? And the reporter looked at me kind of confused, and I said, because the United Russia Party just got a you know, their votes, they got a mandate, most support of any political party since the fall of the Soviet Union. President Putin has a mandate from the people in free and open elections observed by international observers. By every mark, his foreign and domestic policies are being supported by the people. And he is free and democratically elected, and his party is getting continued support. So, what's the definition of a despot, of a dictator, other than someone who goes against U.S. and Jewish interests? And then she just kind of looked at me very confused and said, "I don't know." and I think that when you bring up the idea of what are we fighting for and things like that, then these people, they just hear buzzwords. It's nothing more than leftist propaganda that infects people's minds, and they have no substance behind it. They've just been told that this is what they have to say, this is what they have to believe to properly signal that you have to say this. And they couldn't tell you the first thing about Russia or geopolitics, but they just know. They hear on Fox News, I was talking with Sven on an earlier show this week, where foreign governments are talking about Russian Nazis in Syria for having air raids against ISIS targets, absolutely crazy things. They just use these buzzwords that they've implanted in people's minds to shape public opinion. Could you maybe talk about that a little bit, about the idea of buzzwords versus substance and the dumbing down of the American electorate?
Well, using slogans, cliches, buzzwords, these are, you know, signs of amateurism, of control, of trying to please somebody. You know, it's like, Speaker Paul Ryan in the House repudiating Donald Trump, the Republicans who repudiate Donald Trump. he dominates the Republican primaries. So as far as the grassroots Republicans, he's loved. So it's not in their electoral interest to fight him. Rather, they're trying to please another group of people, a separate group of people entirely. Repudiating Donald Trump in a normal society would be insane because he's so popular. Now they're trying to please this globalist oligarchical system. That's who he's appealing to there. So, you know, the issue is buzzwords are a substitute for knowledge. Buzzwords make you sound intelligent, but you're really not, especially when you're asked follow-up questions. It's a way that amateurs try to pass themselves off as something that they're not. It's a huge pet peeve of mine. I try to avoid the typical labels because labels tell you nothing. You know, I was speaking with someone earlier today, and I said, we could speak to our ideas to the average American, and they'll love it. You put a swastika in there or the word Aryan, and they hate it. It's like it has some magical power. So these words do have great power. I try to avoid them just because I'm sick of them. I used to call them membership card words. A reporter says that Donald Trump is hateful. What he's saying is he's saying to his bosses, "You see how good I am. You don't have to worry about me. I'm on board." It's the death of the intellect.
Well, and that's actually something, you know, I've seen time and time again. When it comes to you're totally right about buzzwords and symbols. That's what makes them so effective. I mean, when you look at the troll culture that has developed, there are these sacred cows that the enemy has said that you're not allowed to touch, you're not allowed to go near. And, you know, first of all, being a nationalist, of course, I believe these principles. I think they're 100% right. But you've told now an entire generation of teenagers that to be a national socialist, to send a picture of a swastika or of Auschwitz to a Jewish journalist that supports more refugees into Europe is you can't do that. And well, of course they're going to do it. It's going to be hilarious. They've really developed this counter revolution. I seem to think because there's the party line. Of course, there's always the party line with the system that you have to signal properly. But there's been this rebellion, and it's so energetic intellectually from especially young people. I mean, like, hey, I'm sitting here on Radio Aryan Monday to Friday from 12 p.m. Eastern Standard to 12:30. You know, and people, you know, we've got this energy going on. I absolutely love it, especially of young people. And maybe, Dr. Johnson, I want to know your thoughts on that because you've remarked, I mean, you've been in the cause for a long time and seeing the younger people, but tell me your thoughts on the system establishing this party line on issues, on how to signal, whether it's on Russia, whether it's on race, whether it's on Donald Trump, whether it's on immigration, whether it's on abortion or gender roles or homosexuality, whatever it is, they've got a party line they have to abide by. And this flip side of has developed this troll culture, which then has developed, especially young people, who just do this to signal against the system that they're going to be rebellious. Then, of course, they read the books and they realize that nationalism is correct. They realize that the Germans actually didn't do anything wrong. It kind of builds like that. So I want to know your thoughts, looking at it as a veteran of our cause, on the system's control measures having a rebellion against them by the youth, and then these youth becoming educated and more motivated to actually fight for the principles. It's no longer a joke. So I'd like your thoughts on that.
Well, we are the equivalent of the dropouts of the early 70s. When I was in grad school in St. Louis to get my MA, my thesis advisor was Lyman Tower Sargent, who is a fairly famous academic anarchist. And we were talking about my thesis, and he was demanding that I use inclusive language and that I bring in all the politically correct things, and he pounded the desk and everything. And I said, some anarchist you are. I said, you're like just a stodgy establishment hick, a hack, I should say. Anarchism, that's for public show. The point is that these guys, the battle line is very clear. That the establishment, that no one working for the establishment can ever poise as a rebel. It's like Lyman Sargent, you're writing all the book after book on utopianism and anarchism, but demanding all of this. because this is how we do it, and this is what you're supposed to do, kind of arguments. It's very obvious, and young people would rebel against that. We have to continue to provide the intellectual backing for that. For someone who uses the slogans and the buzzwords, the thing that they hate the most is follow-up questions. So we have to prepare them for everything. We have to talk about debating tactics. We have to give, unfortunately, we do have to give kind of one-liners, answers to common misconceptions and stuff like that, so that they could hold their own. Because you have all of that type of person doesn't really care about anarchy. It's you know, they want to be in control. It's all for public show. But as a veteran of this movement, I have been in a very, very, very good mood for the first time in my life, over the last year, because I've met so many young people. You're an essential figure there. The people who I'm friends with on Facebook, you've introduced me to so many people, you know, the great questions that they have. They're highly intelligent people who, if society were normal, would be doing very well right now. But it's not, and so they're not. And they've come to us. And for the first time ever, I mean, I used to think that the political door was closed forever. We just had to suffer. But that's not the case anymore. It's open now. And we're making headway. And the thing about, you know, Matt Parrott just published the article. And one of the things he said on traditionalist youth is that stop being scared. Stop being scared of the labels. Just, you know, stand fast. Don't worry about what other people think of you. Conformity is such a hard drive. You know, they're going to hate you anyway, in essence. And that our role is to provide that backing. Say that we have your back no matter what happens. So it is electric. You're absolutely correct. And these are highly intelligent people. If white people, especially white youth, actually do something, if the election is stolen from Donald Trump, nothing will ever be the same again. Because the system's worst fear is that the white kids will be pissed off. Their worst fear, it's their worst nightmare.
Well, and that's actually, I was talking on my show yesterday about the principle that it's not so much about Donald Trump, but if the white working class specifically, the people that have been most maligned, most spit upon by the system, you know, the most abandoned, if they realize the power they had, they could destroy this entire system. It's like in 1984, you know, Winston Smith, as he's evaluating his society, says that the, you know, the outer party, basically the soft middle class, has no revolutionary potential. They've got too much to lose. They're too closely watched. But if there's any hope, it lies in the proles. It lies in the average everyday people that if they can have their consciousness awakened, they can overthrow the system in a heartbeat, because they have this power. It's about realizing the power that you have. And in America, you know, if we can elect Donald Trump against the interests of the bankers, against the interests of the establishment politicians, against the interests of, you know, the Chamber of Commerce Republicans, if the Raptors have evolved and learned how to open doors, you know, then that's a real challenge to the system. And it's not just going to be limited to Donald Trump. So I think that the system is terrified of what Trump represents, and that's why they're trying to stop him. Because if everyday white working families realize they have the power still to retake their own destiny, then the system would be over overnight. We could have a more just and fair and honest system to secure the existence of our people and our culture and every sort of great thing if we just realized that we had the power and work together. So what do you think on that? Do you think Trump kind of represents the proles, the average everyday people, of which I consider myself a part of, because I'm not part of the middle class. I'm not part of the inner party, the people in their freaking, you know, mansions and whatnot. I'm an everyday white guy. I know you are, Dr. Johnson, even though with your degree, because you're an honest man, so that we're all kind of in this together. But what do you think about that, about the, if our people realize that we have the power, the system will be done, and that's why they're trying to stop Trump, because that represents a growing consciousness amongst everyday white Americans that we do have power and can seize our own destiny.
Well, it's the best part of all of this. By combining cultural nationalism, ethnic, racial, religious, with some of the insights of socialism, I mean, it's very, that appeal is tremendous. And the only thing that keeps people away is fear. Fear of being called names on the internet or losing their job. But if they don't have a job, that's not anything they could use. You could say that they have a lot to lose, and that's true. Young professors, when they get hired at a university, are scared to death that they know every word they say could be misconstrued to be racist or sexist, and their career is over. So what they do is they overcompensate. White male professors, I mean. They overcompensate. That's why they're the loudest, most obnoxious leftists on campus. Because they're worried about, they want to make themselves beyond reproach in that respect. So this is what I mean when I say the battle lines are drawn. I know liberals who are sick of this, who it's so blatant, shutting people down. You know, the newspaper headlines recently have been, Putin says if Hillary wins, he's going to declare war, which is ridiculous. We've been saying for a long time that Hillary wants war. She wants war with Iran, Russia, China. She said this in public, and therefore Russia would retaliate. They've now twisted this, and now headlines are saying that this is what Putin is threatening. It has nothing to do with reality whatsoever. But this does have a very strong class basis. I've known this for a very long time. Capitalism is our enemy. And what by capitalism, I mean the rule of capital, the rule of the conglomerates. The free market is good with limits, but that's not what we have anymore. Entrepreneurship is almost non-existent anymore. So you're absolutely right. This has a class basis, and to mix that with nationalism is irresistible, and the system will do anything to destroy it. And that explains their completely irrational reaction to Trump. Trump does represent that. Trump's been saying these kind of things for years. So if he wins, we win. But at least, you know, at that level, how much power a president has. But if he loses, the regime will take that as a blank check.
Well, exactly. And that's where we need to be preparing, getting this information out there. And that's why every podcast, every article, every book, everything that we can be able to bring forward is so important. To be planting the seeds as many hearts, because, you know, I remember the old movie from the 1990s, Liam Neeson was in it, the Irish Revolutionary. It's absolutely slipping my mind.
Michael Collins.
What is it? But,
Michael Collins.
Oh, sorry. Do you have it for me, Dr. Johnson?
Michael Collins.
Yes, Collins, that's it. Okay.
That's my favorite movie.
And I apologize to all my Republican comrades on that. But, you know, where he's standing up in the middle of the street and the British police are standing around. And, you know, he asks, you know, if they take me, who will take my place? And, you know, the guy says, you know, I will. And he says, who will take my place? Then everyone starts, you know, screaming, I will, I will, I will. And that's what I think is so important, that it's not about the individual. It's not about you, Dr. Johnson. It's not about me, Matthew Heimbach. It's not about Matt Parrott. It's not about Jason Augustus. Not about any of us as individuals. It matters that these ideas, which are eternal, of truth, what is good and righteous, be planted in the hearts and souls of so many people that, you know, they can kill the man, but not even bullets can stop us, because these principles are right. And, you know, everyone needs to understand the role that we have in this revolution, in spreading these ideas. Each one of us is a warrior. Each one of us is a messenger. Each one of us has a specific position. And if we stand together, then we're going to be victorious together, because we understand the stakes, and we're all pulling together. So, Dr. Johnson, thank you so much for the Michael Collins help there. Absolute brain fart.
But, one of my favorite movies.
What are your final thoughts for the day? We've talked about a lot of great things, but what message would you like to leave our listeners with?
We have a reason to be optimistic. We have an obligation to support one another if they're in trouble. Anyone in trouble can count on me to back them if there are people. We have more in common with our own people, our own nationalist comrades, than we do with our own families most of the time. And if people are assured of that, the people have their back, they will act rationally and act in the best interest of their nation. We have to make sure that people know that. They're not alone.
I 100% agree. It's something I get messages all the time, and I know our own Jason Augustus, 14 Sacred Words. The title of his album is Not Alone, and he gets a lot of messages from a lot of young people. I get a lot of them too, to say that You know, they read our work, they listen to our podcast, they feel for the first time that there are people that are looking out for them. And that's, you know, that's not only our young people, that's our comrades. You know, they try and, you know, the left gets you fired, attacks you on the streets, might even kill you, threatens to kill your family. I've dealt with all that, you know, and it's not easy. But to know that so many great people have your back, that we stand together and have loyalty with one another, that's what, you know, puts the iron in the spine, that you're fighting for something greater than yourself and people that you love and love you back. And that's what nationalism is. It's one big extended family. So, Dr. Johnson, I think that's a great note. There's so much to be optimistic about. Everything is coming together, and we're marching forward. So thank you for being with me today, Dr. Johnson. Thank you to all my listeners here for another great edition of the show. And remember, be hopeful, have faith, keep the faith, and our victory is assured. So talk to you guys tomorrow. Looking forward to it, and hail victory.
You've been tuned into The Daily Traditionalist with Matthew Heimbach at RadioArian.com.